Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number Smart Beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 40% on the Sleep Number Limited Edition smart bed for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at Sleep Number stores or sleepnumber.com.
Welcome to another episode of Say Why to Drugs with me, Dr. Susie Gage. First of all, thank you to everyone who got in touch with me about the last episode, the one about salvia. It's always really, really great to hear your thoughts on the episodes. Now, this week, Scroobius Pip and I discuss PCP. And this is a drug that was quite often in the media, certainly when we were growing up, and particularly stories coming out of the USA. It seemed like it fell out of favour and wasn't really mentioned for a while, but there are some reports that it's becoming more popular again. So here we go, Pip and I say why to PCP.
Say why to drugs with Dr. Susie Gage.
Okay, so let's talk about PCP.
Yes.
Also known as phencyclidine, sometimes called angel dust. And I wasn't sure whether to do this one, but a lot of people have asked me to on Twitter and on Facebook. And it sort of fell out of favour as a drug while I was growing up, I guess. But it seems like it's growing again in popularity. So I thought it was a good one to cover. It was originally developed as an anaesthetic. It was used intravenously in the 50s, sort of before people went in for surgery. But when they discovered it could cause sort of hallucinations, they stopped using it in that way.
Right.
It became a drug of abuse in the 60s. Lots of hospital admissions from use of it because the intoxication effects can look quite a lot like schizophrenia. And as I said, I've written here, it's much less common now, but reports, certainly in the US, suggest that it's sort of gaining popularity again. The hospital admissions in the last few years have gone up dramatically since the early 2000s. So you can get PCP as in quite a different number of ways. It can be an oil, it can be a liquid or a powder or a crystal or a pill. So it's kind of covers the gamut really. You can sniff it, you can swallow it, you can inject it. You can get it sort of sprayed or soaked onto either tobacco or cannabis cigarettes, and then you smoke it. And as you might expect, if you smoke it, you get a really quick onset within sort of 2 minutes or so. If you swallow it, it's a bit slower, sort of 30 minutes to an hour. The intoxication effects on PCP can last a really long time. And I read quite a few sort of scientific articles about PCP while I was researching this, and some say sort of it will last 2 to 5 hours, some say 4 to 8 hours, some say it could last as long as 2 days.
Wow.
And one study that I read said a large dose may need weeks to recover from.
Yeah.
So it can be pretty wide ranging, I suppose.
Yeah.
So do you know much about PCP?
Or instantly, Rodney King was where PCP became known to me, because it seemed when the Rodney King death in America happened, it was attributed to the reason the police had to be so forceful and hard on him was because he was on PCP. And it gives you extra strength and invulnerability, and he was a danger, and that's why they again had to beat a black man to death in the street. So that's kind of where I became very aware of it. On one of my tours of America, I was running the merch booth and a large gang-looking guy came up to me to chat about the posters we had, and he was lovely. And B. Dolan kind of ushered me away because the guy asked if I get wet. And I was like, hello, I don't know. in what manner? Being all British. And he was, and it was then revealed that he was talking about tobacco soaked in PCP. Mm. He wanted to know if I wanted to come and smoke some PCP, which I didn't, incidentally. and yeah, that's kind of my knowledge of it. But it was always, as said, put out there as almost an Incredible Hulk drug. That someone's taken it, and there's potentially, if they're out of control or attacking, then there's potentially nothing you can do other than shoot them or whatever else to stop them from doing what they want. So it was demonized hugely in that respect.
Yeah, and I think what you've describing PCP sounds an awful lot like what some of the sort of synthetic cannabinoids are being described like now.
Yeah.
And that's not necessarily to say that neither of them are particularly sort of harmful drugs or that they cause problems. Mm-hmm. But it's interesting the way that the language doesn't change. Like the sort of the demonized drug of choice gets described in the same way, depending on what it is. I found a poster from the 50s about cannabis, and it's kind of described in exactly those ways again. And it's interesting you're talking about getting wet, smoking sort of soaked cigarettes or cannabis. It's also known as embalming fluid, apparently, as well.
Wow.
So what does it do? Well, it's a funny one because it's, in a way, it's quite similar to alcohol in that it affects loads and loads of different neurotransmitters in the brain.
Right.
So it affects NMDA, it affects GABA, it affects dopamine, it affects serotonin, norepinephrine, and opioid receptors.
Mm-hmm.
So this is why you get some sort of really unusual, contradictory kind of effects. So you get extreme agitation on one side, but also sedation. It's kind of a stimulant, a depressant, a hallucinogenic, and it has analgesic sort of painkiller properties.
Wow. Again, it makes sense of you saying how it can give the perception of schizophrenia, because again, if it is going to have you ramped up 1 minute, then relaxed the next, then all over the place.
Very hard to sort of pinpoint what's going to happen. It's very unpredictable.
Yeah.
And it's also unpredictable because it's soluble in fat, in water, and in alcohol.
Right.
So the strength of dose, like if we took the same amount, for example, it could have vastly different effects. Mm. So it'll depend on your health. It'll depend on your sort of body makeup. It'll depend on whether you've drunk alcohol recently or not.
Yeah.
All of these things can impact on sort of how it'll affect you. And it's another one, I mean, I feel like I say this in every single episode, but it's another one with very little good quality evidence. So in the 60s and 70s, when it was used medicinally, there were more kind of reports about it. But when measuring those kind of intoxicated, you sort of get a lot of problems, because if you're looking in hospitals, for example, you only see the really extreme cases.
Of course,
people who've used it who don't end up in hospital, that might be the majority of people, for example. So it's really difficult to sort of know.
Yeah.
And also, almost everyone who ends up in hospital for drugs isn't just on one drug.
Yeah.
There was one particular paper that I found where it was the people who were admitted into hospital for using PCP, a quarter of them were also on benzodiazepines.
Right.
40% of them were also on cannabis, and around 40% also on alcohol as well.
Yeah. Yeah.
Did we talk about what's the appeal of PCP?
No, not really.
Yeah.
Again, it's a weird one. I've only known of it as that, as kind of turning everything up to 11, essentially. That you're going to go, have beasts ridiculously charged as such.
Yeah. But also then, if you take a sort of different level of dose, you can end up in this kind of dreamlike floaty state as well. So it's sort of, I don't quite know what the appeal is, and it's probably different for different groups of people who use it, because it can have such varied effects. I think it's another one like sort of, I think it might have been the cocaine episode that we talked about this, that it's like kind of, if you're sort of in a gang and you need to go and sort of be violent or be something, then it's a pep drug in that way, and that it can sort of give you the confidence and the sort of feeling of invincibility that might help you in that situation and that kind of thing.
Completely. And that's, again, the way it was portrayed in the media, that's instantly the kind of thought of for me of, oh, I need to be as tough as I can be. Yeah. I'll take this and that'll...
Yeah, and I think that's...
A Superman drug as such.
That's kind of a good point as well, because the last thing I want to do is sort of perpetuate those kind of exaggerations about it. And so when we're talking about the appeal of all of these drugs, it's kind of, it's very subjective. And that's sort of the bit that isn't really based on evidence. I don't have a scientific literature on why people choose to use these drugs. And it's obviously, it's a really complicated thing. And I just want to slightly sort of step back here and say, we're not saying that, like, that sort of what we're saying about the appeal here is fact. It's our opinions on why people might do it. So should we get on to some of the sort of effects that you might have? And I've got a very long and quite random looking list here of the various things.
I say, after hearing the different parts of your brain, it kind of generates, it's like, this is going to be an intense one, right?
Yeah. So you can get sort of, as I said, a numbing and dreamlike floaty quality. You can get sound and visual hallucinations from it. Time can feel like it's speeding up or slowing down. I guess that's the kind of similar to psychedelics in that respect.
Yeah.
It can affect your mood either positively or negatively. You can experience things like paranoia and transient sort of psychotic-like experiences. Mm-hmm. So these things will sort of disappear once you stop being intoxicated. It's kind of like some of the symptoms of quite THC-heavy cannabis as well.
Yeah.
It'll raise your body temperature, it'll raise your heart rate and raise your blood pressure, again, like lots of the other stimulants that we've talked about in previous episodes. It can make you feel kind of detached from reality. So this might be why it might give you a sense of, like, invincibility, if you feel like there's something sort of like something between you and the rest of the world that can make you feel kind of invulnerable, I suppose. It can, if you go sort of heavier doses, it can lead to kind of convulsions. It can also really affect your breathing. It can shallow and slow your breathing, but it can also make it kind of irregular. You can sort of have really like periods of really fast breathing, but then kind of apnea where you seem to like stop breathing for a moment and then sort of carry on. And as we sort of talked about, it's been associated with aggression and violence. There's some suggestion of it being associated with suicide as well.
Right.
And it has this kind of anesthetic properties, which means that you can kind of properly hurt yourself when you're on it without necessarily feeling it or realising.
Yeah, that's very much, again, a one of the main symptoms I'd heard, again, from the Rodney King case, of them saying we hit him once and he just kept coming, or we shot him once and he just kept coming, or something like that. So it's that...
Yeah, it's got that pain-killing aspect. Yeah. So, yeah. And the other thing it can do is really affect your eye movement. You can have really sort of tremory, uncontrollable eye movement when you're intoxicated. And then if you get onto sort of really, really heavy doses, you can end up hypothermic. So this is when your body temperature raises far too high.
Right.
And that can lead to death if it's really, really severe. So, yeah, that's kind of the list of the sort of intoxication effects.
Yeah.
And it's pretty all-encompassing, really. Like, lots of them sound like a bit like other drugs that we've talked about in previous episodes, but they're kind of all combined
all together,
into one. So it's a pretty sort of full-on experience.
Yeah, it seems like we spoke again and struggled a little on what the appeal is, but partly that's because I could see the appeal at times of any one of them, but of all of them at once, or potentially all of them at once, or not, or rolling the dice on what one you get.
Yeah.
That's a weird one.
Yeah, I think that's a key point, is that in certain situations, a number of those things could be quite pleasant and enjoyable, but unless you can sort of accurately predict, and as we've said, with a lot of recreational drugs that are illicit, even if you sort of know what kind of a dose you need, like, you don't know what you're taking and how pure it is and that kind of thing anyway. So longer term, it's yet another drug that your tolerance to it will go up as you take it. So you need to take more and more to have the same effect. And this can then lead to sort of dependence and addiction problems. And it's also been associated with memory problems with long-term use. Poor appetite and weight loss. I guess this is this kind of stimulant aspect to it, that if it's sort of raising all of your sort of bodily functions like your heart rate and your blood pressure and making you kind of tremor and shake.
Yeah.
It's probably also suppressing appetite, like a lot of stimulants do.
Yeah.
And if you're using PCP a lot, then you're probably not taking very good care of yourself for lots of other reasons, sure. which might be why you see these associations. Long-term use is also associated with depression and with psychosis and paranoia, sort of more long-term. And again, this could be like what we see with cannabis, that because it's an intoxication effect and intoxication might last for days, then if someone's using regularly, how can you really separate the psychosis that you see as an intoxication effect mm-hmm. from a sort of a diagnosis of psychosis? Like, unless this person completely comes off PCP, you can't really be sure that what you're seeing is just an intoxication effect. I mean, it's still pretty serious, but
yeah.
it's sort of from a kind of etiology, like understanding the underlying sort of reasons why these things are happening. It's quite an important distinction to make.
Yeah, of course.
And again, it's really hard to do this kind of research because people who use PCP almost certainly use other substances as well. And trying to untangle sort of the causal directions, like, are these people using PCP because they've already got lots of other risk factors for psychosis, and so they're trying to use it sort of self-medicating, or is it the PCP that's sort of increasing the risk? And it's really difficult to kind of tease all that out.
Yeah, it's certainly a drug that I associate in my mind as a street drug rather than necessarily a club drug, or do you know what I mean, higher areas of society club a drug. It's very much one that I associate with that kind of situation, which there's going to be a lot of things influencing that and a lot of different influences and potentially a lot of different substances.
And I think if it truly is becoming more popular again, it'll be interesting to see sort of with who
is it becoming more popular.
And like, some of the reports that I read about it that were published recently suggest it's kind of a forget of how sort of extreme some of the effects of it can be, that like it was popular and then it became unpopular because it was so sort of intense. And now that kind of sort of negative effects have been a little bit forgotten about, then the appeal of it is going up again. And so it'd be interesting to see whether it sort of cycles again, I suppose. Yeah. So PCP withdrawal, as you can probably imagine, is not very pleasant. And it's kind of the opposite of some of the short-term effects, but we get quite a lot of very different short-term effects. It can also be kind of quite varied, but in particular things like psychotic experiences can be part of withdrawal as well,
right?
So again, this sort of makes everything more complicated with trying to work out whether these people are going to get better or not.
Mm-hmm.
Anxiety, sort of tremors and shakes, eye shakes, and diarrhea, because it's another drug that makes you constipated while you're on it. Okay, so if we get on to sort of myths of PCP. And one that a lot of people sent me when I put a shout out on Twitter was that PCP will turn you into a cannibal.
Right.
And this was the case of this rapper called Big Lurch.
Yeah.
Have you heard of him?
Yeah, yeah.
And it's a pretty horrendous story. So he killed his roommate in 2002 and sort of cut her lungs out. And
right.
there were bits of human flesh found in his stomach that wasn't his flesh.
Wow.
And he had taken, well, so this, the woman who he killed, boyfriend, said that she and him had taken PCP the day before.
Right.
So potentially he was still intoxicated. Like, I don't know whether actually it was sort of proven that he had PCP in his system.
Right, yeah,
that
sure.
kind of, it's one of those typical things where a lot of reports at the time all sort of implicated PCP, but the sort of toxicology reports don't make the press, so it's sort of really difficult to kind of say. It's sort of, again, it's really sort of similar to the Causeway Cannibal that we talked about in the which episode was that we talked about? Was that in the spice episode? I think in the synthetic cannabinoids episode, where it was very much said, oh, he was on, oh no, it was bath salts. It was synthetic cathinones. Sorry. It was said there he was on this bath salts, but when the toxicology report actually came back, he wasn't.
Yeah.
And in this case, sort of, I think one of the reasons that you hear about sort of superhuman strength when you're on PCP is that it's the disinhibition, is that we're probably all much stronger than we think we are, because we never lash out, even in anger, without any sort of self-control at all.
And if
a drug has sort of taken away that final sort of inhibition, thing, then perhaps that is why you seem so much stronger. Plus, yeah. if you've got a sort of painkiller aspect, that if you're fighting with someone, you're not being knocked back by their punches or whatever.
Yeah, yeah.
So you might
the pain isn't registering.
Yeah, yeah, you might seem super strong just because all the normal things that just hold you back that tiny bit no longer apply.
Yeah, yeah, it makes sense.
PCP won't turn you into a cannibal, but it has been associated with a lot of pretty sort of horrendous things, and that might be due to it sort of, I don't want to say inducing psychotic experiences, because it's very, very, very rare for people with psychosis to harm other people.
Right.
It's something that gets a lot of press when it does happen, but it's extremely uncommon. That people with psychosis are far more likely to hurt themselves than anyone mm-hmm. else. And I think that's almost certainly true with people on PCP as well.
Yeah.
So there are cases of people sort of gouging their own eyes out.
Wow.
And PCP has been blamed for that. People walking into traffic because they've lost perception of time, so they think that they can cross the road.
Right.
Obviously, they can't. I've written here murder and mayhem, because it was the demon drug of choice.
Yeah.
So there are so many. If you search PCP sort of in sort of news reports, then you see all sorts of really horrendous things, and how much truth there is to that is difficult to say.
Yeah.
And it's yet another thing where, like, deaths from MDMA, pretty much every single case where there's a death from MDMA will get reported in the press, whereas that's not the case for... It gives you a really sort of overinflated view of the harm, when in fact there's sort of... I'm not saying that it's not sort of bad and dangerous, but if you see it every single case where something happens, you might think it's happening far more frequently than it actually is.
Yeah.
It gives you a distorted picture in comparison to sort of other things.
Of course.
And so the effect of PCP, we've talked about how the effect will depend on your sort of physical state, but it will also, like with all the substances we've talked about, it'll depend on your mental state as well. It'll depend on your personality. It'll depend on your current psychological state, and it'll depend on the environment where you're taking it. It's set and setting. I think we've said that in every single episode.
Yeah, yeah.
But it's quite key. And I think it's highly unlikely that one-off use in someone with no sort of risk factors for psychosis, in someone who's kind of in a safe environment and sort of taking it, sort of going into it knowing what to expect and things.
Yeah.
I think it's highly unlikely that in that situation something as extreme as this could happen. I think there's almost certainly a lot of other things going on as well.
Yeah.
But it has been associated with these things, and from what we can see from the media, which may be a biased picture, like it can lead to some pretty severe kind of outcomes.
Yeah.
So is there anything else about PCP? So one thing that I think is very interesting as a researcher is that it's very hard. We don't really understand that much about schizophrenia, and so it's really hard to develop drugs to treat schizophrenia.
Yeah.
But one way to sort of, if you're going to develop a drug, you really need to start with animal models of the drug. But how on earth can you develop an animal model of schizophrenia? How can you tell if a rat has schizophrenia?
Yeah, of course.
But what has been done is PCP has actually been used as an animal model for schizophrenia. So you give a rat PCP, and then you give the rat what you think is this antipsychotic to see if it will bring them out of sort of the effect that PCP has.
Yeah.
So in that respect, it's been very useful for kind of trying to develop new ways to treat really sort of debilitating diseases like schizophrenia.
That's fascinating. So it works to simulate it to then try and find solutions.
Absolutely. So some uses, and obviously it used to be used before as an anaesthetic until it was realised that was not a brilliant idea.
Yeah, yeah.
Cool.
Perfect.
And there we are. Now, thank you so much for listening. The next episode is one that's been requested a lot. We're going to be talking about DMT. Now, some of you will know that we've already had an episode about psychedelics. So if you haven't listened to that one already, it might be worth doing that, or even revisiting it before we get to this next episode. And the DMT episode will be up in 2 weeks' time. So in the meantime, take care. Bye.
Hold up.
You've been listening to Say Why to Drugs with me, Dr. Susie Gage. The music was by Jim Murray and the artwork was by At My Name Is At. Say Why to Drugs would not have been possible without the generous support of I'm a Scientist, Get Me Out of Here, the Medical Research Council, and Scroobius Pip's Distraction Pieces Network.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
Welcome back to Two Judgy Girls. I'm Mary from the Bay.
And I'm Courtney from LA. TJG is the podcast where we spill all the tea on your favorite reality TV shows, celebrity gossip, and everything in between. We're here to bring you our unfiltered opinions, hilarious commentary, and plenty of laughs along the way.
We're two SDSU Delta Gamma sisters with a microphone and a whole lot of opinions. Each week, we dive headfirst into the wild world of reality television, from Bravo to all the trash TV you could want. We break down the drama, dissect the latest scandals, and share our thoughts on everything from the jaw-dropping moments to the embarrassing antics.
But that's not all. We're not here to just gossip. We're here to connect with you, the jurors, and share our love of all things pop culture. Whether we're dishing on the latest celebrity breakups, discussing our favorite guilty pleasure movies, or sharing embarrassing stories from our own lives, we promise to keep it real, keep it fun, and keep you coming back for more.
Come judge with us.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.